Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 11th, 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Had Erica, and now she's gone. But let me tell you, we've got 56 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, looking for mostly sunny skies today with a high of 84. We'll see winds out of the south. Southeast, and she's back. So let's bring Erica on. Good morning.
Good morning. So today we have a really great day in the forecast. Area of high pressure, again, is pretty much going to be our dominant weather maker. However, we do have a piece of energy, kind of like what I was talking about yesterday. We did see that we saw the potential for an isolated thunder shower later today. That was in the forecast. And modeling right now is pretty much going in that direction, simply because we do have a confluence of wind profiles, pretty much something coming from the south and from the north. And it seems to me right over, I'd say, Summit County, Wasatch, Salt Lake counties, and then north of there. So we're tracking that very closely for you. Apart from that, temperatures for today are going to be in the mid-80s. Overnight lows are going to trend in the low to mid-50s for the next several days. We're seeing mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies for today. A couple of extra clouds develop later this afternoon. And for tomorrow, I'm going to stick with partly cloudy skies simply because we're seeing an influence from the Hurricane Alida in the eastern Pacific with the amount of southerly flow that we're getting moving into Utah. It's pretty amazing that we're getting that much moisture tapping into Alida. So that's what we're seeing for tomorrow. Temperatures in the mid-80s. We're going to see slightly warmer temperatures by this upcoming weekend. Still a lot of sunshine in the forecast, mostly sunny skies on both Saturday and Sunday. I initially had it set sunny, but I'm going to go ahead and increase cloud coverage to mostly sunny skies with a mix of mid and high base clouds. And temperatures are going to be in the upper 80s by Sunday and next Monday. So overall, a nice stretch. Just keep an eye out for the fact that we could see some high base showers today and some dry lightning with those dry conditions. Otherwise, a very nice stretch of weather.
Okay. Thanks, Erica.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on, we'll be talking with Early Childhood Alliance Coordinator Kristen Schultz and Brandy Rasmussen, Director of Creekside Kids Academy and PEAK Program. They'll be talking about a couple of events being sponsored by the Alliance for local families. Finally, Franklin Williams is this month's PC Mark guest speaker for the free Lunch and Learn tomorrow. He'll be talking about exercising and training when hamstrung by a pandemic. Stay tuned.
That's ESCO.
And coming up this morning on This Green Earth, writer Catherine Alto talks about her new book, Writing Wild, Women Poets, Ramblers, and Mavericks Who Shape How We See the Natural World. The book profiles some 25 women whose writings help deepen our understanding of our environment and our connection to the natural world. From Dorothy Woodsworth to Mary Austin, Carolyn Finney and Elizabeth Rush, Writing Wild summarizes their work and inspires the next generation of women to pick up a pen and write wild. Again, all of that coming up on today's edition of This Green Earth, right after the local news hour and NPR News at 9:06. Well, a decision on the Summit County lawsuit against the town of Hideout over the annexation of Richardson Flat will be handed down on Friday. Yesterday's hearing in Utah's 4th District Court lasted all day. KPCW's Sean Higgins was there and has this report.
After a marathon hearing that lasted a full 12 hours, Judge Jennifer A. Brown told lawyers for Summit County and Hideout that she would not be able to render her decision until Friday, August 14th. Summit County filed the lawsuit against Hideout after their July 9th town council vote to begin the process of annexing 655 acres of land in Summit County for use as a mixed-use commercial development area. Summit County was granted a temporary restraining order on August 4th, blocking any further action by Hideout with regards to the Richardson Flat area. Monday's hearing was to determine whether to dissolve the restraining order or convert it into a preliminary injunction. Summit County alleges Hideout violated Utah's Open Meetings Act prior to the July 9th town council meeting by holding private meetings with developer Nate Brockbank on a proposed development on the land in question. The lawsuit also alleges the town did not provide sufficient details about their plans to begin the annexation process prior to July 9th and intentionally misled the public. Emails submitted into evidence and witness testimony showed Brockbank did meet with members of the Hideout town council prior to the July 9th meeting. Lawyers for Hideout argued that because these meetings were not with the full council and no official decisions were made, the Open Meetings Act was not violated. Hideout's lawyers also argued the town was well within its rights to act on current state law to begin the annexation process. A controversial piece of legislation known as Utah House Bill 359 was passed in the closing hours of the 2020 Utah legislative session and contained an amendment allowing municipalities to annex unincorporated land without consent from the affected counties. Hideout took advantage of this legislation on July 9th, and House Bill 359 may be repealed at a special session of the legislature later in August. After hearing closing arguments on Monday evening, Judge Brown decided that due to scheduling conflicts and the complexity of the legal arguments of the case, she would hand her decision down on Friday, August 14th. The temporary restraining order will remain in place until then, although Hideout was granted permission to hold their August 12th public hearing on the annexation. Hideout is not allowed to take any substantive action until Friday's decision. If Judge Brown does rule in Summit County's favor on Friday, Hideout will be unable to move forward with the annexation plans before the state legislature votes on the repeal of House Bill 359 during the August 20th special session. If the court rules in favor of Hideout, the town council could vote to continue the annexation process at a meeting on August 18th before any action by the legislature is taken. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So this hearing to decide whether to place a permanent injunction on Hideout's proposed annexation went for, as we reported, 12 hours. My understanding is that you were one of the first witnesses. How long were you on the stand for?
I'm not sure how long I was on the stand for. I was the first witness. And then I am the county's representative, so I sat through the hearing.
All right. So the hearing is complete at this point? You don't have to go back?
We need to go back and hear the judge's decision on Friday.
Right. But no more testimony or anything like that?
My understanding is that no more testimony is taken. It's just a decision at this point.
All right. So what about the legislature's August 20th special session? We've heard from the North Park developer's attorney. He's confident that House Bill 359 will not be repealed. If not, then does Summit County have a case?
I think you know, we're always concerned about this. This certainly has huge ramifications to the county. Whether it goes through, whether it the judge decides in the county's favor, and Hideout is stopped from moving forward at this time. I think you know, We're keeping our eye on everything and keeping vigilant to this because of that. You know, we have heard reports that the legislature is certainly considering a repeal, but we haven't seen anything definite yet that tells us that's on their agenda.
Yeah, so the judge's decision was put off until Friday. Hideout Town Council, as we reported, was given the authority to hold its meeting tomorrow, just not to take any action. Meanwhile, the Summit County Council has a special meeting today and then again on Wednesday in closed session. To what? Discuss the what-ifs here? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think we constantly need to be talking about what it is that the county and the attorney's office is doing around this from a litigation standpoint.
All right. Well, anything else you wanted to mention about the hearing itself?
I don't really want to comment further on that until there is a decision made.
All right. The Summit County Council, again, meeting Wednesday starting at 3:15 via Zoom. Taking a look at that agenda, a proclamation for American Wind Week. Can you tell us what's happening with the wind farm project up by Evanston?
You know, we hear about it every once in a while. I believe they're still going through their due diligence with Rocky Mountain Power, with the state. You know, I don't believe it's close to any type of construction project at this point. But it's probably more appropriate that they comment on that, than the county government.
All right. Let's see. Also, a resolution to put the wrap tax on the ballot for reapproval in November. The basics are the tax is 0.1%. It's on the sales tax. It's divided 50-50 between the art and recreation projects. And it's also called an opinion question. Does that mean that the vote is not binding?
According to our attorney's office, it is the state law calls it an opinion question. But according to the according to the attorney's office, the council can't go against the opinion. So it's just a little nuance in state law. I suppose that there might be some way that the council may not adopt it, but according to the attorney's office, they have to follow the opinion of the voters.
So I've seen some signs along trails saying, you know, that this was paid for with RAP funds. Who's doing this?
Well, I mean, that's part of the factual information that the county has been put out. So the county is the one that has put out those signs to indicate what projects have been funded by the RAP tax over the past 2 decades. As you know, once the council does make the decision to put this on the ballot as an opinion question, the county can no longer be an advocate. In fact, no public official can be can advocate for the ballot measure. At that point, we can only put out factual information or education about the measure itself or past projects that have been funded by the RAP tax.
All right. Let's see. And so that is this the meeting then that happens?
This is the meeting where the resolution will be first considered. It could, the council can take action on it today, as noticed in the agenda. They could decide to wait until the following week, but it has to be done by next week in order to have enough time to get it on the ballot.
Okay. Let's see. Along with that resolution, representatives of several nonprofits, including KPCW, will be listened to. I mean, they're there to support the tax, I'm guessing.
I'm sure. I mean, we obviously have been bringing forth other nonprofit representatives over the past few months to talk about the RAP tax, mainly to just get public exposure to what the RAP tax has done for our community and why it was has been in place for the past 2 decades in order to enhance the arts and culture and recreation amenities within our Summit County communities. That's a continuation of that. Those organizations that benefit from the RAP tax and projects will be the ones that likely will be the advocates after this is put on the decided to be put on the ballot by the county council.
Okay, and then at 5 o'clock, an ordinance allowing the highway authority to enforce the county parking code. There wasn't a staff report to link to. Is this about trailheads again?
Yes, this is the second step. During the meeting last week, when a different document was adopted by the council, was the first step towards the Basin Rec being able to, in this case, Basin Rec being able to enforce parking regulations as a code violation. This is the second step that the attorney's office talked about that needed to be taken in order for them to do that. So they're just following up with what they described last week.
Okay. And who or what is the highway authority?
Well, the highway authority has to do with one of the county council's roles, similar to a meeting as the governing board of one of our special districts. They are the highway authority. So anything that happens on county right-of-ways or roads, they have to act as the county highway authority in order to make those things legal.
All right, Tom, anything else you want to mention?
A couple of things. First of all, we still are advertising for an Economic Development Advisory Board members. The original set of members that will be this board, it closes today at 5 o'clock. So anybody that's interested, please apply. And then I want to give a shout out to Tyler Orgill and the Livestock Committee, the Park City Summit County Arts Council for the fair activities that did go on this last week. The livestock sale went off very well. And so did the virtual art show. So I want to compliment everybody for that.
Hey, I got one other thing, because I thought I was talking to Jana at one point and thought I was going to bring this up with her. But anything, again, the legislative special session happening next week, the 20th, anything in particular the county's doing to prepare for that?
Well, I mean, certainly we're looking at anything related to annexations or land use. We're waiting for the call, which is the official list from the legislature and the governor's office on what will be included in that session. And then, of course, we're working with the Utah Association of Counties to deal with anything that is specific to our county or counties in general. So we're organizing around those two things right now.
Okay, but at this point, we haven't even seen an agenda.
I have not seen the agenda. That's correct.
All right, Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Tom Fisher is the manager of Summit County. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:22. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting in regular session tonight will resume the public hearing on the massive Dakota Pacific proposal at Kimball Junction. As KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, that comes after public comments 2 weeks ago were postponed due to a technical snafu during the county's electronic meeting.
The Planning Commission convenes Tuesday starting at 4:30 with Dakota Pacific as the first item on the agenda. County meetings have been held remotely since the COVID-19 outbreak. At the July 28th meeting, county officials found that their Zoom license allowing up to 100 participants was maxed out by the number of citizens wanting to link to the meeting. County Development Director Pat Putt said that nobody could have predicted that.
Back in April, when we went back to work via Zoom, we knew that we were potentially going to hit some hiccup. We moved forward with that, believing that it was important to continue the work of local government.
Putt said the Snyderville Planning Commission made the right decision to postpone the hearing, given the importance of the project. This week, the county has a Zoom license that can accommodate up to 500 participants.
We're going to try and work both sort of on the planners who will be involved in that meeting with their applicants to make sure that if there are applicants and their team waiting to have their meeting with the, or their hearing with the Planning Commission addressed, that we're not going to be having them in the queue taking a box for the public who want to speak to the tech park.
He said they will look at the tech park plan approved in 2008 and the revised mixed-use neighborhood now proposed by Dakota Pacific.
We're going to be talking about some of the bigger details. You know, the density. Is this an increase in density? The answer to that is no. We're going to be talking about, you know, whether or not this is taking away or impacting the existing open space. The answer to that is no. We're going to be talking about the transportation and traffic implications associated with this, both from the applicants, mobility consultant, as well as our engineering department.
The Snyderville Commission has four more items on its agenda. Perhaps the most significant of those is the last item, which has the Snyderville Recreation District asking for a trailhead parking plan in the Spring Creek area north of Interstate 80. The district is asking for up to 11 parking spaces, most of them street side on Glenwild Drive.
Basin Rec has been experiencing some management problem. It's a really popular portal for that whole trail system to the north. And so this is a proposal to have a more formalized parking area for those guests and the users of the trail, hopefully balancing some of the concerns that were expressed from the neighborhood there.
County Development Director Pat Putt for KPCW. I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, North Summit High School is scheduled to play its first game of the football season on Friday. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that some of the procedures around the Colville Gridiron are changing, that due to the coronavirus outbreak. What isn't changing is the team's name. They're still known as the North Summit Braves.
Superintendent Jerry Holmes said one positive note is that the schools are not facing this challenge by themselves. They're following the directions set by the governor's office, the State Board of Education, and the county health department. He said in his district, remote learning equipment will be available for any students and their families who don't feel it is appropriate for them to return to a classroom.
We've got different situations, some who maybe have someone in the family who is compromised, and so they don't feel like sending their children is a good idea, and we will remotely teach them. We purchased cameras for all of our classrooms, and our hope is to be able to teach those students at home as it happens in the classroom. If that will work, it will be certainly less work for the teachers. Our concern initially was that they'll be teaching the kids in their class, and then we've got to worry about at home. But so we're going to try to make that happen simultaneously. And
you said that so far a few students in each of the three North Summit schools have indicated they will stay at home. Holmes said face coverings will be required in classrooms.
And we're using the definition that the governor and also our county commissioners have deemed as a face covering. And so we're obviously requiring that. We are offering our teachers whatever PPE they feel like they need. We'll be putting some plexiglass up and providing gloves, masks, shields, whatever they feel like they need. We will accommodate students as well.
In the classes, he said, teachers are being asked to remove all non-essential items. Holmes said they're trying to distance the participants as much as they can, but they can't guarantee 6 feet. While North Summit High has traditionally only had one lunch period, they will now have two. The superintendent said they will have no large assemblies and will cut back on unnecessary contact. And if a staffer or a student has contracted the coronavirus, they will be required to go into a 14-day quarantine. Holmes also said that all their teachers are coming back.
Certainly, we don't have any teachers that are not coming back because of this. We've had a couple of our paraprofessionals who have decided that it's not worth it for them to come back, and we respect that, obviously. But as of now, all of our teachers will be coming back, and each of them has some different requests as far as our accommodations. But we're grateful that they're coming back, and we hope that we can keep them safe in all of this.
North Summit Superintendent Jerry Holmes. For KPCW, I'm Rick Roth.
When it comes to open space and community growth, KPCW keeps you informed. We're watching the development plans for Kimball Junction and the base of Park City Mountain. Plus, there's controversy around Hideout annexing part of Summit County. Meanwhile, it looks like one of the last dairy farms in Heber Valley could be saved from turning into a subdivision. How do you want your community to grow? How do you stay informed about what's going on? KPCW, stay connected and keep listening like a local.
Well, KPCW has a new partnership with the Early Childhood Alliance to provide news reports specifically focused on children ages 0 to 3. The Alliance is a group of local stakeholders dedicated to engaging and educating the public about the importance of young children's health and well-being before they enter kindergarten. One of their goals is to make early childhood care, development, and education a community priority. To that end, the Alliance is providing KPCW $6,500 to fund local reporting on this issue for the next 6 months. KPCW will have complete editorial control of the coverage. So what better time to kick off the new coverage of child care and development issues than right before the school year starts? On the phone, I have the coordinator of the Early Childhood Alliance, Kristen Schultz. She is joined with Brandy Rasmussen, director of Creekside Kids Academy and the PEAK program. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Kristen, let's just start with you and tell us, give us just kind of the background here of the ECA, the Early Childhood Alliance, what it is and why it was formed.
Sure. So this is an initiative, as you said, we're really focused on all of the children in the Wasatch Back and trying to ensure that they have equitable and abundant opportunities from the prenatal stage through age 3. And so this was an outgrowth of, it was initially a task force that the Park City Community Foundation had on early childhood education. And also it was in coordination with the social equity work that the Community Foundation did with the Park City, the municipal government of Park City. Because as you know, this is also a social and economic justice issue. When we look at the data, there are significant disparities in kindergarten readiness that are based on income, minority status, and English language fluency. And so one of the outcomes that we're really trying to change by our efforts is to make sure that all of our kids are kindergarten ready by the time that they are, you know, of age to go to kindergarten.
So how is the Alliance being funded?
So it's funded through the Early Childhood Fund at the Park City Community Foundation. And so we're ever so thankful for all of our donors and supporters.
So what kind of budget do you have?
Well, right now our budget is around $750,000 a year. Of course, that's dependent on fundraising. And we do have a fundraising event. I don't have the exact details of it, but we are scheduling one with the Park City Community Foundation for September 22nd. It's going to focus on storytelling and, of course, will be virtual. So we don't have the exact details of when to register, but if everyone could mark your calendar now, we'd love to have a lot of people attend our event on September 22nd. It'll be at 1 in the afternoon.
And how many kids are we talking about? How many kids are we helping here?
Yeah, so, you know, we have been, frankly, you know, the Wasatch Back area for us includes definitely all of Summit County and a lot of Wasatch County, but we're really kind of focused on what we consider to be Summit County and the Park City metro area. So when you're looking at Summit County, there's about 1,800 kids that are in those 4 years. We're looking at kids until they turn four, so including their third year. So there's about 1,800 kids in Summit County. And then we think in the area that we are trying to focus on, which includes, for example, Heber and some of the areas where we have a lot of our workforce people in Park City but are living outside of Summit County, you know, there's probably an additional 1,000 or so kids that are in that, you know, somewhat roughly defined geographic area.
Wow, that's quite a handful there. But it seems like only the Park City School District is offering the education to the early preschools. I mean, I know that some of the districts have, you know, for fourth grade, but not the three-year-olds.
The three-year-olds, yeah. So, you know, we are trying to work with South Summit and North Summit as well, but frankly don't yet have those relationships established. We're still relatively new. And I know Park City, as part of their future of learning efforts, are trying to look at different ways where they could both expand their 3- and 4-year-old preschool and then also some more kind of robust offerings, you know, geared towards wraparound services. But I think our focus is more, it's a wider focus than just the access to childcare and education, although that is certainly one of our strategic priorities. But we're also interested in kind of building parents' capacity. You know, they are their child's first and best caregiver and teacher. And so we're focused on home visiting programs, increasing referrals, providing services and information. We also are really focused on trying to strengthen the connections among all of our early childhood providers. We have so many fantastic providers in this community, and I think if we're able to just strengthen those connections and streamline the referral process, we can help everyone kind of do more with the resources that they're working with.
All right. And Brandy, I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about the what that looks like now with the providers. But Kristen, first, I mean, of course, we've got school opening up, South Summit and Park City next week, North Summit this week. But again, that's for the kindergartens, even later, the first through 12th graders. What about the children who are pre-K? I mean, how has the pandemic affected their back-to-school routines?
Well, and I think I'll let Brandy kind of speak to the day-to-day stuff, but I think that is why we are hosting an early childhood panel discussion for back-to-school for the young kids. So that's August 18th at 1 p.m. We have several providers that are local, either preschool or childcare providers that can answer that. I do think there's been a lot of coverage on the K through 12 and even universities going back to school, but not as much on kind of our youngest learners. And so we are going to have the roundtable discussion, and the speakers will be available to answer questions. So I hope anyone who has questions or wants to learn more about some of the local programs, please join us on August 18th at 1. But I think I'll let Brandy speak more specifically to how COVID has really changed kind of our day-to-day experience in early childcare.
Yeah. So Brandy, I mean, are all of the preschool providers back in business?
We are slowly getting there, absolutely. I think that just like the elementary schools, there's parents to have a lot of questions and there's a lot of unknown. So we're all dealing with those challenges. And I think that's going to be one of the big benefits to having this panel discussion is parents are going to get the opportunity to figure out and learn what we're doing and how we're moving forward. But yes, it appears that most of us, if not all of us, are back and open and really trying to, you know, get our feet underneath us and get going for the fall.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference, though, isn't there, between kind of early childhood education and then just daycare? Or is there? I mean, is it all of the same?
No, I don't. That's a tough question, honestly, because our goal together, both as childcare providers and early childhood educators, is really to help develop the whole child, their social, emotional, cognitive, physical development, in order to build a solid foundation for lifelong learning well-being, emotional well-being, all of those things. So those goals are shared amongst both childcare providers and your preschools. So there's a lot of overlap there just due to the nature of the ages that we serve.
Sure. Okay, well, let's, before we talk a little bit more about that back-to-school panel discussion, a documentary is going to be shown. It's called Starting at Zero. It sounds like this is going to be an online documentary. Can one of you tell us about the film and how people can watch it?
Sure. So it is premiering on August 12th, so I haven't seen the film yet, but just based on the trailers and some of the information that I've read about it, I think anyone who's interested in early childhood development should certainly sign up. It's free. So it's at startingatzerofilm.com is how you register. And there's two times on August 12th. You can see the premiere either at 11:30 or 5:30. And then they're going to have a panel discussion. And so the film is, it's billed as exploring the power of investing in high quality early education. And it's made by the Saul Zance Charitable Foundation. And so Saul Zance was a famous film producer. He did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus and English Patient. And anyway, several Oscar-winning pictures. So my guess is that it's a pretty high production value. Of course, I haven't seen it. But it's free, and so I just wanted to let everyone in the community know that this might be another opportunity to learn a lot more about how important it is to invest in these early years.
Okay, and then a week from today, the roundtable panel. Brandy, tell us a little bit about how people can participate in that.
I'm going to let Kristen do that, if you would, Kristen.
Sure, yeah. So if you go to our website, it's just a Zoom panel discussion. So you just registered, and of course it's free. If you go to our website, which is earlychildhoodalliance.net, if everything works right on the back end, a pop-up box should appear right when you get there, which will allow you to register. But it's also, you're welcome to send me an email. My email is kschultz@pc.top, and I'm happy to speak with you about it in more detail and help you register if there's a problem. But it's really just a Zoom, you know, panel webinar, and so the registration should be free and easy.
All right. So, Brandy, I mean, what are some of the topics or points that you want to make sure get brought up?
During the early childhood panel discussion, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that we're going to let most of the parents direct that with their questions. We'll talk about our programs, what we're offering, and how we're doing things. But I think most of it is going to be driven by the parents who have questions on how we're dealing with the day-to-day, how we're dealing with the issues that arise due to the coronavirus. So we're going to really let them ask the questions and drive where we're headed with that.
All right. Well, I don't know if either of you heard the report this morning on National Public Radio, but some 97,000 children testing positive for the coronavirus in just the last 2 weeks. Child cases are up 40% and actually now represent about 9% of all of the U.S. cases to date. And while most children don't get critically ill due to the virus, what's less clear is how effectively children will spread the virus in a classroom setting, not only to their friends and classmates, but to the teachers and school staff. So given this, do our youngest kids really need to be in preschool? You want to take that, Kristen?
Well, I mean, I think every family has to make their own decision. And I know all of the providers are really doing their best to follow all of the public health guidelines. But it certainly is a personal choice. I think when you look at the data overall, though, the overwhelming benefits of being in a high-quality childcare environment are powerful. And then you also have the issue of, you know, the workforce issue. It is very difficult to work at home with a toddler. And, you know, childcare, I think a lot of people may not think about this, but childcare is really a two-generation workforce issue, right? Because it's essential to support your workers who actually are working today, the parents, but it's really also vital to developing our workforce for tomorrow. And so, you know, I think it also depends if you have an option that you feel is safer and you feel is still developmentally appropriate for your child, then I think everyone is supporting parents in whatever choices they're making. But I think the question, you know, outside of the COVID world, is it important to have preschool? I would answer enthusiastically yes.
Yeah. Yes. And Brandy, what are some of the precautions then that child care providers are having to take to deal with this?
Well, we're dealing with extra cleaning and sanitation, of course, and not allowing parents in the building, which has been a difficult one, quite frankly, for the families to, you know, not be allowed into a building where their children are. That's been a recommendation by the state. But we're doing health screenings at the door, you know, face shields. working with all the limitations that, that we get and the ever-changing landscape that, that we're in front of. So really, it changes daily, but we're doing the best we can to partner with parents to make sure that we keep both the kids and the adults in our program safe.
Yeah, so who are wearing the face shields? The older, the adults? And
no, you know, in our program, we have them for all the students over two. And it's, you know, most of them are doing a pretty good job with it. They're doing well.
Okay. Anything else either of you would like to mention? Again, you've got a couple of events, tomorrow's premiere and then next week's roundtable discussion.
Yeah, I just want to encourage everyone. We also are affiliated with Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. This is a program that mails a book every month to kids from birth through age five. And so we are the affiliate that covers the three zip codes that are the primary Park City zip codes. So that's 84098, 84060, and 84068. So if you know any children that live in those zip codes that are 0 to 5, please sign them up. Again, it's a free resource. And we really would love, you know, all of our young community members to learn to love to read from an early age, and hopefully building up this library and having a book arrive every month will create some early readers.
Okay. Kristen Schultz and Brandy Rasmussen, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW, Newstime 844.
Hi, I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and each week on NPR's TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey with TED speakers, where we'll ask big questions.
And that we truly have to ask ourselves, like, well, why is it noteworthy?
That will inspire us, challenge us, and even change us.
I literally feel like I'm a different person. Do you feel that way?
I did. Join us.
Sundays at 10 a.m. on KPCW.
It's 8:45. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Exercising and training when hamstrung by a pandemic. Franklin Williams is this month's guest at the free lunchtime learning being held tomorrow at noon at the PC Mark. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, currently I work for the Transportation Division here in Park City. I'm the ITS coordinator for public transportation. So I'm kind of the technology guy for all the buses and the technology around town, which is a little bit of departure from my prior journey as an exercise physiologist. I have about 30 years of training, racing in various sports, and I have a master's degree in exercise science. And I still engage local athletes and coaches and some consulting and helping them with the training programs and try and stay fit myself for a long, healthy life.
Okay, so what's going to be happening tomorrow then in the hour that you have?
So what we're going to do is, part of this came out of a little bit of a joke of all the negativity and stress around COVID, and we were trying to come up with a new name for COVID, which is what you'll see in the description. So what we came up with was common objects for varied and inexpensive muscular or fitness development, trying to make some fun out of this whole craziness that we're living in. So we're going to go over a little bit of exercise science theory, which will help people understand some energy metabolism when you're exercising and why you do certain exercises, depending on what your goals are. And we'll go over a couple of myths and misconceptions at the gym, like maybe some fat burning zones or creatine supplementation and what it may do. And then that will lead us into what a general exercise plan should really look like during the pandemic and what you can do at home with common objects around the house to try and stay fit.
Well, tell me about some of these common items.
Well, you can use chairs, tables for pull-ups, sit-ups, all sorts of pulling and pressing exercises. Go to your refrigerator, grab a gallon of milk. Gallons of fluid are generally 8 to 10 pounds, depending on what they are. So there you've got some ready-made dumbbells just sitting around the house, water bottles. You can go fill up a backpack with a garbage bag and some dirt from your garden, and that can get really heavy. Strap that on your back and do some body weight squats with a little supplemental weight. You can use grocery sacks, fill them with books, to make dumbbells or kettlebells that you can then do exercises with. So just getting a little creative around the house, and you can find all sorts of objects. And if you're crafty with rope, you can start tying things together and make pulley systems. your own little TRX system. So hopefully it'll be fun and we'll get some crafty skills going.
Yeah. So this is going to be held virtually, correct?
Yes. Unfortunately, we were hoping to do a real interactive section over a session over at the Mark. But the virtual thing is going to present hopefully not too many challenges. Yes, I'll probably be in my backyard at home, and hopefully this will go well. But virtual, yes.
Yeah.
Zoom meeting.
Okay. So how do people register or show up or participate?
There is a pre-registration through Eventbrite. I can send you that link. Cole Johnson's helping me get the word out on that. There's also Zoom meetings, the link to the Zoom meeting, and that has been pushed out over the citywide email network. And I can find out from Cole how to get you that information as well. But it's an Eventbrite Park City Recreation.
Okay. We'll see if we can't track it down. Anything else you want to tell us about tomorrow?
No, well, I hope people will join us and it will be fun and engaging, and we can help people try and stay motivated and a little bit less stress and fit during this pandemic that we're all living through, and hopefully be a good time.
Okay.
So please join us.
All right. Franklin Williams, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Again, Franklin Williams is this month's guest at the free lunchtime learning taking place noon to 1 p.m. Not at the Mark. It'll be done virtually instead. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. More than 2 weeks after the fire started, firefighters have the upper hand on the Upper Provo fire this morning. The human-caused fire started Friday, July 31st. It is now 84% contained. While the number of acres burned has not increased in a week, two Forest Service roads have remained closed throughout. 480 acres of conifer and lodgepole pine have burned. 150 total personnel remain on scene, along with two helicopters and three engines. This morning, the Federal Incident Management Team will be transitioning management of the fire to a Type 4 team. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. Meanwhile, the Division of Wildlife Resources has temporarily closed all 17 of its wildlife management areas in central and northern Utah to recreational target shooting due to wildfire concerns. DWR reports that 28 wildfires have been caused this summer by target shooting, costing taxpayers nearly $1 million. According to the DWR, a bullet ricochet is also likely responsible for starting the 438-acre Big Hollow fire that burned near Heber City last month. That fire started at the Walsburg Wildlife Management Area. Scott Walker, the DWR Northern Regional Habitat Manager, says with firearm target shooting, sparks from metal targets aren't the only threat. A bullet or other projectile glancing off a rock, he says, is all it takes to cause a spark and a fire. Utah health officials have reported 9 more confirmed deaths from COVID-19 on Monday, but the weekly average for new cases dropped to the lowest level in 2 months. State figures show that Utah has averaged 400 cases per day over the last week, the lowest weekly average since mid-June. Cases spiked up to a high of 671 per week in mid-July, but have been steadily falling in recent weeks. State leaders have stopped short of implementing a statewide mask mandate, but allowed counties to make that move while imploring residents to wear face coverings when out in public. And again, North Summit High School is scheduled to play its first game of the football season on Friday. Some of the procedures around the Colville gridiron are changing due to the coronavirus outbreak. North Summit Superintendent Jerry Holmes told us that they are requiring face coverings from the spectators, and he hopes that local fans will cooperate. They're taking other precautions on the field as well, and in particular for the players and the coaches on the sidelines.
The new rules for this year only, I'm sure, are allowing teams to line up. Instead of from the 25-yard line to the 25, they're letting us extend from the 10-yard line to the 10, which will allow us to separate those kids. Because really, if you consider when they trace for contact tracing, they're looking for when they've been in close contact for 15 minutes. Well, the kids on the sideline would be more prone to that 15 minutes or longer, so we want to keep them separated the best we can and with the face coverings.
On a related item, the national controversy about using Native American references for sports teams has flared up again in recent months, but Holmes says they are not changing the name of their mascot, the Braves.
And we've had a lot of Native American groups and tribes come to our homecoming assemblies. We had a 100-year celebration a few years ago and involved them. And at this point, I think they feel like we have honored them. The name has not been offensive to them. I realize other nicknames have been offensive to many, but at this point, certainly no move that way, because we feel like we are honoring rather than mocking.
Meanwhile, as we've reported, the North Summit District plans to begin its school year next week, August 19th. Holmes said they will not get a student count until October 1st, but he says he doesn't expect to see much of an enrollment increase. He thinks the population is stable at just over 1,000 youngsters. The North Summit District has not had a tax increase during his tenure, and he says they are not proposing one in the middle of a pandemic. But he says they have offered a good compensation package to their teachers. The starting salary is at about $44,000, but he says they offer one of the best insurance packages in the state.
We were able to give steps and lanes and a 2%. It was a great negotiations this year. I think our teachers and other staff realized that with what's going on, I think in a lot of cases they weren't expecting anything, hoping to get steps and lanes and to maintain their insurance. But because of our property tax, not the rate increase, but the revenue increase, we were able to, even with the cuts from the state, we were able to do 2%.
That's the superintendent of the North Summit School District, Jerry Holmes. KPCW News Time now, 8:55.
If you ever find yourself lost in the dark and you can't see, I'll be the light.
KPCW has been the light to guide our listeners through political campaigns, parades, protests, and now a pandemic. Our summer drive starts August 17th. Please make a donation. Call 435-649-9004 or kpcw.org.
When we are called to help our friends in need.
8:56, good morning. Well, the new development proposals coming to the Summit County Planning Department include some added residential at opposite ends of the Snyderville Basin. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more on that.
During his regular visit with KPCW, County Development Director Pat Putt reported they have received 20 recent new applications with a variety of building proposals. Of the two that are the most significant, one involves a parcel on Pine Brook Road, south of the commercial area. The site, which has an old tennis court, is being proposed for a rezone to community commercial and a conditional use permit for 21 residential townhomes. Putt said the plan is for affordable housing.
It's going to be a mix of 2 to 3 bedroom townhouse units, all at 80% or below the area median income. We're just beginning to circulate this project for service provider review, you know, the utility districts, the fire districts.
He said another application at the other end of the basin in Promontory is for 110 residential lots. Neither of those includes new commercial development, but Putt added they're expecting the new park commons to be finished by this fall or winter. The project, developed by the Crandall family near the new park amphitheater, prompted controversy during its review. It has 12,000 square feet of commercial on the ground level and 38 affordable units above that.
And again, those are going to be a mix as well of studio, one-bedroom and two-bedroom units. And this particular project is the building that's going in next to the amphitheater space in the plaza area at New Park, just to the south and the west of Maxwell's in that area. And looking back at it in retrospect, I think that's kind of a win-win for everybody. It's a win for our championing some, you know, workforce affordable housing. It's a project that I believe now that the property owner, the developer, the Crandalls, believe is a real viable project. No impacts on those public spaces that are next to it.
County Development Director Pat Putt. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
And the Summit County Council recently heard a citizen complain about the Toll Canyon open space area near Kilby Road. The resident claims that the Snyderville Basin Recreation District has deployed goats that have eradicated vegetation along a road through the area. Steve Horvath said that what's happening may be ostensibly for fire mitigation, but it violates the open space values in Toll Canyon. He noted that in mid-July, an old paved road down the canyon was designated by the council as an emergency exit. He said the goats have been allowed to eat down all of the plants except for existing trees for some 100 feet on each side of the road.
And this vegetation removal is being done the entire length of the road from Summit Park to Pine Brook. Every wildflower, every shrub, every other native plant has been removed down to the bare soil the entire way. You go out there, you can see it is literally bare dirt except for sticks where the shrubs used to be.
He said that 15 acres of forest has been stripped out for 4,000 linear feet. He says that violates the conservation easement on the Toll Canyon open space. The easement allowed only 5 permitted uses of the land, and anything else is specifically prohibited.
You know, widespread indiscriminate plant eradication is not a permitted use. And because it's not a permitted use, it is, quote, expressly prohibited, unquote.
He invited the council members up to Toll Canyon to take a look for themselves. Council Chairman Doug Clyde said that given his professional experience, he thinks the trimming of the vegetation is needed for health and safety.
I can assure you, as a person who has managed literally maybe 100,000 acres of timbered land in my life, doing everything from managing those little tiny plants that you're talking about to how many board feet are we going to get out of this forest. I can assure you that these practices are common and considered to be appropriate and considered to be...
That's Doug Clyde. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock. You've been listening to the local news hour here on KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock. Headline news is next, followed by This Green Earth.